Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. I have a very special guest today, and that is Alan Resnick. He's a writer, editor-in-chief of a variety of dog show magazines over the past many decades. So welcome, Alan. I appreciate you joining us.
Hey, Laura. I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. Excellent. So give us a little background. Give us the 411. Tell us kind of what brought you to Purebred Dogs. You've been at this for a very long time in a lot of roles, not just as a writer and an editor.
I have. Well, I come from Canada. I grew up in Montreal. I did not come from a dog family. I was the kid who brought home birds that had fallen out of trees, and dogs followed me home. We had a beagle at my urging. I stumbled over a copy of Dog World probably when I was about 12, and I inhaled the contents. I memorized all of the kennel names and saved my allowance to buy a subscription. And that was a very exciting thing in my life. I heard about a dog show that would be held in Montreal. I was 12. I was too young to drive. My poor father was kind enough to drive me and leave me at the show. The world was a simpler, safer place then. So I was left to my own devices at a dog show just to soak up the atmosphere. I met a very early mentor. She had Afghan hounds. I knew her name well. I fell in love with Afghans through Dog World before I even had laid eyes on a flesh and blood Afghan. Beckoned me to her. She obviously saw that I was fascinated. She must have seen some potential in me because she handed me a pinbrush and said, "Make yourself useful, young man." She needed to groom Afghan hounds, and she pushed me into the ring. She'd entered more dogs than she had hands to show. Luck would have it, I took a first, and she took second, third, and fourth with litter mates. So perhaps the die was cast. She told me she could use my services the next week, and I said I probably couldn't ask my father to drive me to a distant dog show again. And she said, "Just give me your phone number." And she had a long talk with my parents, and she was kind enough to pick me up and take me to a dog show. So that was an early case of paying it forward. And for many years, long after I got my driver's license, we became the best of friends, and she was an early mentor. The other thing that happened that I think was a really important part of my dog education was that in Canada in those days, and perhaps it's still the case, you did not have to own a dog as a junior to show a dog.
Right.
Any dog entered could be shown. And so that meant that even though I didn't own a show dog, I got to go to dog shows and learn to free bait Shelties and Whippets and learn to wrestle with Newfoundlands and lots of Afghans. And it was a huge education, and it just kind of reinforced and cemented my love for the sport. With my first job in my first apartment, I got an Afghan hound and became more and more involved in showing, in club work, in stewarding, in all aspects of showing, eventually judging matches and sweepstakes. In the 80s and 90s, I was involved in Cavaliers for two decades with an ex-partner who had grown up with dogs, who didn't care for the feline temperament of the sighthounds, but I turned them loose at a dog show, and I figured I could fall in love with anything, and they chose Cavaliers. So we had Cavaliers. Because being competitive, it had to be a good one.
Right.
We bred and owned champions. I finished dogs for other people in all four colors. And in the last 12 or so years, after having a lifelong love affair with the Tibetan breed and all things Tibet, Tibetan Spaniels have been my small breed, along with the Afghan hounds.
You know, we all have that sort of like our old age breed. So I think that's kind of cool.
Old souls. Very, very wise, very
yes.
Solemn, very cat-like. And for me, the Tibbies and the Afghans just have a phenomenal relationship. They get along well, and I do better with the sighthounds and with a more aloof temperament. I don't need five dogs in the bathroom with me. The Afghans and the Tibbies look up from the couch and say, eh, they'll be back. They're moderately or engaged when they hear a can opener, but I don't do well with clingy people or clingy dogs. So these are a good fit for me. As far as my career was concerned, it's been a pretty eclectic career. I was an editor for public television. I've been an editor for 40 years or more, magazines, books, newspapers.
Right.
But because of my involvement with dogs, among the publications I worked for and contributed to was Dogs in Canada, which in its heyday was the CKC's equivalent of the AKC Gazette. I became the editor-in-chief of Dogs in Canada. The magazine was a back-to-back winner of Best All-Breed Magazine of the Year at the DWAA competition, Dog Writers Association of America. And that meant that we beat Dog World and the Gazette and Dog Fancy,
right.
Little Old Dogs did. So I subsequently was headhunted by Fancy Publications, as it was known at the time, to move to California. They had purchased Dog World. It had become kind of generic. Prime Media owned it. McLean Hunter owned it. And that was the magazine that I cut my teeth on.
Right.
And my very first articles back in the 60s and 70s were published in Dog World. So it only took me 40 years to become the editor of Dog World. Which was very sweet.
I love that. That's a great story, though, Alan, that, you know, starting from writing it to editing it. I think that that's awesome.
Well, there were bound copies of Dog World over the decades, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. It was kind of an out-of-body experience to read those bound copies and see my byline and flash back to me pounding out those on a manual Royal typewriter.
Exactly.
When they were published.
And even go back to when you were a little kid and you read your first article. I just think that's a beautiful, the synergy is gorgeous.
Well, for my beleaguered parents, he said, this is a phase. Well, that phase took me to California and got me on TV and got me doing color commentary and just have given me an amazing life. And all of those magical names that I memorized in Dog World suddenly became my peers and my mentors and people that I respected. And it really came full circle. So it was a lovely thing. In time, Bo Bengston felt comfortable enough because I was there and we were old friends through our Sighthound connection.
Right.
That his new magazine, Dogs in Review, was sold to us. And I was suddenly the editor-in-chief of Dog Fancy, Dog World, and Dogs in Review. And Bo and I worked together for many years. Bo as editor, me as editor-in-chief. So it really was addressing audiences at BA, MA, and PhD.
Right.
If you were an entry-level dog owner and wanted to do the best job with your pet dog, Dog World and Dog Fancy were your go-to magazines. And then if you were an aspiring exhibitor or a handler or a judge, Dogs in Review is where you went for authoritative information.
It was a great magazine. I miss it.
Thank you. And so, you know, last year, last summer, July 2017,
right,
when the current publisher decided to call it a day and close shop, and Dogs in Review was closed, along with a number of other titles in their stable. The old expression, when one door closes, another door opens. And suddenly, for the first time in 25 years, I was no longer the editor-in-chief of a national dog magazine. And I was suddenly in a position to be able to apply for a judge's license. And I didn't have to show myself judging sweepstakes and bred by groups and puppy groups and a lot of unofficial groups. I love the discipline of judging. And for those listeners who aren't aware, the AKC considers dog show editor slash publisher one of those professions that constitutes a conflict of interest.
Yes.
I might quibble with that. We have sales reps who sell ads. The editors don't sell ads, but whatever. That is the rule. And so suddenly that window of opportunity presented itself. I applied for the three breeds with which I had hands-on experience over the past 40 years, owning, breeding, showing. That was Afghan Hounds, Cavaliers, and Tibbies. And as of November, I'm a permit judge of those three breeds. So I'm very excited. With some very cool assignments around the country this year. So that is another chapter in this colorful life.
Yes, absolutely. And it's amazing. I hear this a lot, you know, when I talk to people on the show, just where you start with this one little thing and it just sort of mushrooms into this huge, enormous life. And I think it's one of the beauties of purebred dogs and the sport of showing dogs.
I agree. I always find it funny that the kids who are born into dog show families hate it for the most part because they consider themselves cheap labor. They get dragged to dog against their will. Those of us who weren't born into dog families, who love it, who crave it, it's like running away to join the circus. And you can't for the day until you come of age and have an apartment and can start making up in numbers what you lacked over the years. So there are those two groups of children. And, you know, eventually you become an adult. And eventually, if you've kind of immersed yourself in this world, as I did, you go from owner to exhibitor to breeder. Being a journalist, I was also able to really be an advocate for purebred dogs. I did a lot of TV and radio, both in Canada and the U.S., and it wasn't so much a matter of letting people, explaining the nuances of our arcane sport. Sometimes it's simply how to be the best owner and why the predictability of a purebred is a very good thing. And explaining to people that a lot of people put more consideration into buying a toaster, do more comparison shopping when they buy a toaster than when they buy a dog. So I try to explain in a gentle, in a funny, but in an accurate way, why it's important to go to a dog show and see all of these breeds and find a breeder with whom you have a connection.
Absolutely.
And, you know, get the very best dog and get a great mentor for the life of the dog and not just a dog.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the change, because I think to me this is fascinating, starting also as a kid reading the magazines, and you see the difference just in the advertising in the magazines, right? So what we used to see was advertising that had even pedigrees, and it was much more about the breeding and the kennel than it was about the winning. And
I agree.
Those advertisements over time have changed. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Sure. I think originally we had three categories of magazines. We had entry-level educational magazines that contained an advertising component. The component was small box display ads and even classified listings.
Right.
And I think of Dog World and the AKC Gazette and Popular Dogs. Then we had single breed and group magazines. Most every breed had a breed magazine. And then we still have group magazines, Sighthound Review, Working and Herding Dog Digest.
Right.
Those magazines, I think, are meant for your peers in the breed. The judges who read them are often breeder judges. Pedigrees are included in ads. There are stud dog and brood bitch issues. Those are really important. And the third category would be the glossy show dog magazines. And, you know, we think back to Kennel Review. We think back to Dog News when it was a monthly and not a weekly.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the arrival of the internet and breeders posting websites, many of the entry-level magazines have ceased publication in print format. We've lost the Gazette. We've lost Dogs in Canada. A lot of us have to remind ourselves to go to the Gazette and read the PDFs and are of an age when we really miss the print magazine. I think also with so many breed magazines having folded because readers simply found it more economical to have a website and change it weekly, change it daily if they felt like it, breed magazines for the most part have fallen by the wayside.
I'm the editor of my Breed Club magazine right now, and we're in the midst of a big discussion about the future of the magazine for all of these exact reasons. So it is a challenge.
The e-magazines with all of the bells and whistles and carousels are impressive, but honestly, when I think of the mean age of multi-group judges, some of them barely do email.
Mm-hmm.
So for younger breeder judges, the e-magazines are probably a great idea, but all you need is a power failure. And suddenly, e-magazines are less useful than reading a print magazine with a flashlight. I'm obviously showing my age here, but I'd like to think there will always be a place for books and print magazines. And sadly, we've certainly lost a great many iconic magazines.
Yeah.
I think the ad show dog magazines over the decades have become more sleek, more sophisticated. Photographers have offered design and layout as an adjunct service. And whereas those ads used to be the exception, and they would come in a TIFF, they're now the rule.
Yes.
And if we look at ads in magazines, typically copy is generally minimal. There is very little contact information. Advertisers, for the most part, are not looking to solicit inquiries or tell you that they have puppies for sale. The win is front and center. So while graphically and aesthetically ads have become more sophisticated and more glamorous, a lot of them are also more overt. And
Right. Sometimes,
you know, you'll find an ad that consists of a full-page head study with a dog's call name. And the subliminal message seems to be, if you don't know who Jiminy Cricket is, and you're not on a first-name basis with Jiminy Cricket, we don't want to know you. We don't need to know you. Some of those ads might as well have a banner across the top saying, memo to the judges. It's very clear the purpose of the ad. And I think by not including the registered name in full, by having the contact information, the breeder's name, the owner's name, in a teeny-weeny type size, we're forgetting the mean age of our multi-group judges. And some people would perceive those ads as really being cold and not very user-friendly. They're probably user-friendly to that group of judges for whom the advertiser is targeting the ad, but they're certainly not friendly. And I think, you know, we need to be cognizant of that. And later on, we can perhaps get into some of my pet peeves. I think you can be more successful or less successful based on the way they're put together and the message that they project.
Well, thank you very, very much, Alan. I really appreciate your time on a Saturday morning. And I know our listeners do as well, because there's so much knowledge here and so much history and so much good advice. So thank you very, very much. All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. She is bringing us our tip of the week, for which we're very excited. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
Great. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Awesome. So what's our tip today?
So I've had people come to me recently, you know, springtime, people have dogs going through coat change, or they're starting to do a lot more hiking or running their dogs in fields, and their dogs are either getting a little bit matted from coat change or burdocks or, you know, other pieces of grass kind of getting in there and causing some matting. So I was going to give a little dematting tip.
I love that.
So, you know, being a poodle girl, I'm a proponent. You know, I love the Chris Christensen, like their ice on ice dematting, like shampoo, conditioner, spray. Like, I think that it's an awesome product. It works great as a system. Big fan. But for those of us that, you know, maybe we don't show poodles and we still have a dog that got some burdocks in it and it's all matted up, cornstarch. So
yes.
Cornstarch is like the age old remedy before any of these products were made. We used to use cornstarch if we had really matted Afghans, just like put some in there and work it through the coat, and you'd be really surprised at how it just really helps to loosen up that mat. But despite all the sprays and all the things you can do, you get a burr or some grass or something that's in the coat that's causing a mat. You dump some cornstarch on it, kind of work it in around the offending area, and just start to break it apart first with your fingers and then use a pin brush. I always say you go fingers, pin brush, slicker brush, comb, right? Like that's the order.
Okay, good.
You know, you want to break it. Remember, you're moving whatever it is from the skin out, right? So, but first of all, I'm going to put the cornstarch in the offending area. So like if I know there's a burr or maybe it's a big area of smaller burrs that got covered, I'm going to work the cornstarch in, then break apart as much as I can with my fingers, then work out as much as I can with the pin brush, then work out the little tinier, finer hairs with my slicker, and then just a comb to check. So that's how you're going to save the most hair on your dog. It's going to be the least irritating to the dog's skin and get you where you want to be. So cornstarch is a secret weapon. And the best part is, say you're at the cabin or the cottage or a friend's or something, and this happens to your dog. You might have a brush. You might have a brush that you can use, but you might not have any of those other systems with you, but you can get cornstarch anywhere, right? Like even up at the cabin. Right.
And it's cheap.
It's uber cheap. And even at the cabin in the woods, when your dog comes in, you know, you don't think it has a beard because it has so many furs in its face. The cornstarch will save the day.
I have definitely lived that. It's not a pretty picture. All right. Well, thank you so much, Allison. That is an awesome tip. I love it. And listeners, don't forget Pure Dog Talk 25 in your checkout code when you go to your Leading Edge Dog Show Academy course, and you will get a 25% discount, and you can have a cup of coffee on Allison and I. How's that?
We'd love to see you there.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Allison. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.